So thank you very much, everyone. It's time is 4:36. We're going to get started. We do have a quorum present. So first off, I'm just going to say we have food, so please feel free to help yourselves. Packets, placards, and everything is on the table. We should have food moving forward. We're budgeted for it, just a matter of logistics. So I end up ordering it myself because we meet frequently. The least we can do is provide you at least a light meal. So moving on to the first item on our agenda, we do have minutes this week. And actually, we'll say Terrell was kind enough to get me the minutes for September 27th. We'll do those next week just because in terms of time to get them out, didn't give anyone time. But first on the list.
They're included.
Oh, well, people look at them, but being that no one else had the chance to look, I will table them. But first is April 25th, 2017. There actually was no recorder. And so these are actually compiled by myself based off the agenda and my recollection and notes from that meeting. In essence, that meeting was just us talking about the university here and interview board candidates. So it was 90% executive session, which is why the minutes are relatively short. And it also was us congratulating our former clerk who graduated. So are there any comments, questions, or concerns on the minutes from April 25th?
He was a good clerk.
Thank you. Hearing no others, the chair puts the question. All in favor of approving the April 25th minutes, please raise your hand or placard. April 25th. We have a package for you.
I know, I'm pretty mad. I think I might not have done that. Yeah.
Okay. I've got it. Okay, so are you in favor of approving them? Or do you want to abstain?
Abstain.
Okay, so all opposed? All abstain? The chair abstains? I vote 3-0-2. Those minutes are approved. Moving next on to the September 13th minutes. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns regarding them? Michelle?
I just have a grammatical note that I'll give to the clerk. And okay. Then a substantive note on business of the day B, fourth from the bottom.
Fourth from the bottom.
Michelle said it's odd, but parts of it are required by state law, not all of it. So I just wanted to make sure that was clarified.
This is a different version. I corrected them, and
that was the version. I thought that was the version you had sent me.
The updated one.
Yes, that's what I was doing.
Oh.
Well, anyway, thank you for bringing it up. Here, is there any a second to that? Amend that.
No. I am.
You were pointing. Well, I will check my email after the meeting. So
literally just now.
I was gonna say I was speaking with Mr. Lloyd, but. And actually, no
email
is coming through
yet.
Yeah, the other part
was there.
Oh, okay.
Then. Yeah, so if I just.
Oh, look, I got three new members.
And actually, I will. Actually, I'm going to be emailing. That's concerning because the Miss Casey asked for that also asked for consideration. And I was about to email Alex that we were going to have a discussion about that. I'm concerned that he went ahead and did that without discussing with the committee of the GPC staffing committee or myself. But,
no, but he has the power to.
Well, it's not that he has the power. I'm concerned in terms of we have a third person who actually has been emailing me and has attended a number of numerous meetings. My concern was not given fair consideration and also was a former member of the hearing board, but I will take that up with him. So, okay, there's a motion, there's a second, and a duly appointed member, so welcome. Any dissent to that amendment? Hearing none, the amendment is approved unanimously. Are there any other comments or questions regarding the minutes? Hearing none, the chair puts the question. All in favor of approving these minutes, please raise your hand or placard. Jeremy, are you, two, three. All would like to oppose approving the minutes. All would like to abstain. The chair abstains. I vote 3-0-2. The minutes are approved. Actually, 3-0-3. The minutes are approved. Moving on to September 20th, 2017. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns about those minutes? September 20th. Okay. There. Any comments? Hearing none, the chair puts the question. All in favor of approving those minutes, please raise your hand or placard. All who are opposed, all would like to abstain. The chair abstains. I vote 4-0-2. The minutes are approved. And the last portion is the September 27th meeting minutes. Actually, no, that's just 27th, pardon me. And then we have one after that. So for the September 27th meeting minutes, they were sent out today and they were not circulated to the full committee. So because of that, I would ask that we table them to the next meeting to allow members to review them in advance. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any dissent? Hearing none, the minutes from September 27th are tabled to the next meeting. Finally, we have October 4th. These minutes were also actually generated by me because we didn't have a clerk and our recorder, my attempt to record it regretfully did not work. So it is a very skeletal outline. I only actually cited myself in one note that Mr. Liebert had made that I had written down. So it's very skeletal, but any comments, questions, or concerns, of course, you are.
I would just like to have it noted that I locked the room at C2.
Of course.
So I have notes.
Okay. So we'll add a since we'll add a bullet under the since four number two, we'll put in bullet four, we'll put it as bullet one and then renumber the other three. The judicial administrator left the room to allow these committees to have a robust discussion. We'll add it. Okay. Is there a motion to amend? Second?
Second.
Any dissent? Any comments on the motion to amend? Hearing none, that motion will say carries unanimously. Any other comments or questions or concerns regarding these minutes?
If I remember correctly, I think it was there just late.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Then we will just correct that as a clerical error. Any other comments, questions, or concerns? Hearing none, the chair puts the question. All in favor of approving these minutes, please raise your hand or placard. All who are opposed, all who would like to abstain, vote 5-0-2, the minutes are approved. Moving to back to our regularly scheduled agenda, we are moving first to an update on the previous code amendments from this committee. So as members would like to remember, our last meeting we wrapped up the housekeeping code changes. They were put to the UA, and yesterday the UA unanimously passed them. And they will now be conveyed by Mr. Kaufman to the president for her consideration and hopeful approval. Also, for the record to note, I received an email from Dean of the Faculty, Charlie Van Loan, about his concern about a procedural irregularity in the UA's bylaws. I reviewed his email last night, and based on the points raised, I don't believe we violated the bylaws, and I will be responding, myself, Mr. Kaufman, will be responding to him as soon as, hopefully this evening, to clarify that with our response and to verify that we did in fact handle this correctly, but we will of course keep the committee apprised. We have some pizza if you'd like any.
Oh, thanks.
Are there any comments, questions, or concerns about the previous code amendments? You're just saying that we just approved the minutes and we're just mentioning that the code changes have been approved by the UA.
Awesome.
Fantastic. And next up is for discussion and examining hate speech and the campus code of conduct. Just to provide an update, I actually had a meeting with the Black Law Student Association about an hour and a half ago. We were speaking just in terms of just their involvement. I've had spoken with a number of the community groups and a number of individuals who are interested. Just for the committee, to recap the committee, we have asked Connor Hodges to chair it. Nate Stetson, who's actually now a member of the committee, has also graciously agreed to serve, as has Professor Lieberwitz. And actually, I'm going to be meeting with Mr. Kaufman, Mr. Cruiser, hopefully over the next couple of days, at the very least, Mr. Kaufman, to formalize the real structure for this. Our goal is to have an open forum. We're looking at the end of next week, or possibly early the week after, just depending on when we can get the schedules out. That will be, in essence, as widely advertised as possible, with the intent of all who are interested to come and provide feedback. The idea with the working group is to have a system where there's some layers. So there's a core group that will be appointed and confirmed by this committee. And then in essence, it gets further out because we're trying to have it so that anyone who wishes to be involved can be involved. We're recognizing that if we have 500 people on the committee, nothing is likely to get done. So on that, actually, if there's no objection, I'd like actually the committee just to vote on having Connor Hodges be chair and Professor Lieberwitz and Mr. Stetson serving just as the initial members. So we have that formalized. And then next week, I will hopefully have a more formal presentation for where we're headed after speaking with Mr. Hodges as well in terms of just a roadmap.
Do we want maybe Connor to like send a statement in and then we can talk about that officially next week?
Absolutely. We can do that. I was simply trying to, in terms of, the working group has been relatively informal, and it's the point where the rubber needs to start meeting the proverbial road. So starting to say we have membership and we're going to approve them, and then start really, hopefully, after next week, the committee, the working group should be off to the races and undertaking their endeavor, which we will to find out. So that being said, yeah.
Will all meetings of the working group be open to the public?
Absolutely. As our standard practice. Any other comments or questions?
Are these three people the only core members?
No.
Okay.
And just again, if you're not a voting member, please provide 20 cards. It's not your fault. It's in the bylaw, but we can. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. So that being said, our goal is to start it off today and then move on to the idea is to try and keep the core group relatively compact, people who have expertise and are interest, or and not expertise and interest, and then to move out with people who are. Have just expertise, people who have just interest to try and really keep the committee flexible. Because I'm concerned that if it becomes a dozen people or 20 people, it's going to simply become unwieldy. Especially considering the incredible nuance of this and the unlikely. I mean, there's just so much there that the goal is to keep it small.
Yeah. Question. Mm-hmm. Could we urge the committee chair, presumably Connor, to work with either Vina or Charlie? On adapting the way they publicize the calendar changes as outreach, because that was very successful in keeping everyone engaged. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that might help as we go forward with what is
contentious. Absolutely. I will certainly, as I mentioned, we're going to be meeting with Connor just to really, I've generalized, but even have a mock-up of a diagram, which really is to explain to people how we're going to do this. Because again, after seeing some of the comments raised with the president's task force and some of the yeah. criticisms that I've heard levied, our goal is to avoid those as much as possible.
And they've already done this work, so.
Jeremy.
I would also encourage that we seek the input of this group for suggestions to include in that committee, because I know there's a lot of experience and background sitting right here in this room.
Absolutely. I erred to mention the one thing I've been saying every time. If you have anyone who's interested, please send their names in. The goal is to have as many people as possible, as many people involved as possible to get that wide range of perspectives and the wide range of experience. The goal is to have a compact core and then move out. And I'm actually working on just a mock-up diagram to make it easier to explain to not just this committee, who hears me speak ad nauseum, but to have it to the community as well so people can understand that we're trying to be as transparent and really trying to strike the best balance we can on this issue. Any other comments or questions? Dale.
Is it too soon to begin discussing this with our constituent assemblies?
Not at all. So we will, hopefully, my goal is to work with the Office of the Assemblies to, I'm looking at hopefully next Friday to maybe get something like Eurus GO1, it's a large free space, but we're going to find a space and hopefully, actually this evening I would send the emails out and then schedule it. And hopefully that'll be, in essence, a kickoff in terms of just internally, we'll bring in feedback. I will be there. All members of the committee and obviously the committee will also be invited, take down feedback, and then from there, the working group will really get underway. Our goal also is to have some just basic ideas for how people can get involved and as a working listserv so that we can start keeping people in the loop. I've already had people who've contacted me and I've taken down their names to ensure they're not forgotten.
Yeah, so I think that this is great. I think that, you know, there's obviously like a lot of public sentiment that people feel very strongly about this. But one thing that I want to make sure is that there is no structure that has like already been in place. And ultimately it's the prerogative of this committee to essentially like make sure that or to create a subcommittee or an ad hoc committee. And so I really think it's important that like if you feel strongly about a certain membership structure that you like you speak your mind now, because we want to make sure that everyone is able to be included, also that it's efficient. And if it's a committee that belongs to this committee, you know, we want to make sure that it's a membership structure that you guys have like buy into. So I would recommend like opening up a discussion about specifically what the membership structure of this ad hoc committee would look like.
Of course. And just for
I don't want to free ball.
No, I agree. That's a concern that I've raised with you as well as Connor. The goal is to be inclusive as much as possible, but obviously understand constraints. Right now, we have an undergrad, a graduate, and a faculty member on just the short list. You can find a staff member just to round out from this, in essence, in terms of people that are directly through. And then after that, I heard from a number of grad students and undergrads who are involved. And there's a certain aspect of self-selection. Our goal is to publicize this widely, and people who come forward will be able to be involved. But our goal also is to seek out individuals who we think have expertise, which is also why we're trying to balance self-selected, because obviously self-selected, you have people who have either a perceived or actual stake in the game or interest versus people who are just, who may have expertise, who may have to seek out.
I would suggest bringing on people who are going to be asked to enforce mm-hmm. and adjudicate to make sure that you've got rules that have teeth in,
yes.
and ideas that have teeth in, things that you can actually enact. So campus life, in particular house rules, I think they typically kind of join in later. My staff, but also folks, the judicial administrator, mm-hmm. And any other suggestions.
And also, this working group, I will be keeping this committee appraised of where they're going. So the goal is to not send them off and then forget about them. The goal is to keep them.
I just don't want to have people building up something that's very wonderful idealistically, but maybe not actionable.
Agreed. That is the concern. The hope is to, just in terms of where we're looking longer term, I should say, the working group will meet, will handle the, a lot of the outreach, a lot of the nitty-gritty. I will be attending as much of their meetings as possible, as well as they will be open, so they will. I want to ensure the committee is aware of them. They will draft some language, come to hopefully a rough consensus on that. It will then come to this committee where I imagine we'll get a very thorough vetting and a very thorough discussion. And then after that, we will either determine when and if to advance it to the UA, where then it will get another round of discussion. But that being said, our goal is to not duplicate or waste effort considering that we are already over half of the semester. And we've gotten a lot done, but just looking at this as a very large task, especially considering our docket. Michelle.
After a submission by Connor or anyone who's interested in serving as kind of the chair of this ad hoc committee, would it be possible for this committee to charge that group or the core people with first selecting membership, bringing that back to our committee and recognizing how they're going to structure, how they're going to meet, how they're going to solicit public comment? I think the calendar committee did a wonderful job of having an open space where people can submit comments. So I think at this point, it seems like we're talking a lot about hypotheticals in which probably the people who are going to be on the ground to find those subject matter experts seems a little bit better use of their time than our time. So that would be what I would suggest.
Absolutely. That I could not agree more. That's why I'm meeting with Mr. Kroff and Mr. Hodges. I hope is for the next meeting to have some of these rough PR documents in terms of structure and just an idea so the committee is aware, we can tweak and then hopefully approve them so they have their charge. And after they have the form, so they don't see the informal kickoff, they can start be off to the races, so to speak. Sarah?
Could we possibly do like an open forum and then after like fully staff the committee? Because I feel like publicity-wise, it might be beneficial to get people like get the discussion going, mm-hmm. and then after like people who are interested, people who want to really work on this, could like sign up to mm-hmm. or like apply for the committee.
Yes, that's the goal. The goal, and it's in, for the forum is, this is why having a mock-up will make it much easier to explain. The goal is to have the core group, three or four people from directly from the CJC, and then after that, the other core group, the committee itself, will start handling, trying to find those experts. And then the goal with the kickoff also have information about how to get involved. I'm sure there will be a number of emails about that as well. And my hope is the core group is going to help us with organizing everything, and then they themselves will have to do a lot of heavy lifting because they're the ones who are going to be at the end figuring out how to structure it. But I will have documents. I hope it's happened today. I simply didn't have the time to get them fully pulled together. But by next meeting, to have some rough sketches of where how this is going to look and where it's going to go, so the committee can discuss and hopefully approve them.
Yeah. Do people have like an idea as to like what size they think would be good, where, you know, how, like what role the assembly should play in this, if there are other organizations that should definitely send a liaison, like we want to make sure that there's a, you know, that we have an idea of how to move forward with the membership structure. So if people have thoughts on that, this would be probably a good time to air those.
So, not big thoughts, but you probably want an odd number so you can make decisions. 5-7 sounds all right to me. Those would be my thoughts. In my experience in department governments and so forth and so on, even numbers, sometimes you end up with real loggerheads, and they just, you know, mm-hmm. that's not a good idea. So 5-7 sounds right to me.
Jeremy.
So I agree with you, Richard. I think there might need to be a few additional, just because I would like to make sure that we have a representation from, at least some representation from all of the major affected groups, which includes enforcement, which includes those within affected communities, particularly those in leadership positions within those communities who are respected, because that's where we're going to get our transparency from. So I want to be careful with trying to limit it too small. I understand the reason for that. I think an odd number is very reasonable. And I have some suggestions, but I don't want to make them right now here because I want to touch base with them first. So I will follow up via email.
Thank you for that. Next speaker is Anna.
I have been hearing concerns about the presidential task force in that affected communities aren't necessarily getting to pick up their representative holders or even perhaps have representative holders. And that's all speculation and worry and not something we need to deal with, except that I don't want us to do that here. And as we're thinking through 5 or 7, if we've already got a quorum, 3 or 4?
Right now we have 3.
We need to be aware of how we are involving those communities, or this is going to have that backlash.
When, on that, even looking at the presidential committee, that's also one of the reasons it's going to be all comers, please come in. Yeah. And that's also the idea of having a small core that is, frankly, tied to the CJC, so it's not, because my concern is, once you start having to pick who gets a seat and doesn't get a seat, there's always someone who will not get a seat and they will never be happy. So to avoid that with this, the goal is all comers, in essence, have different layers just because the logistics of that, you can't have 500 people in the core, but to have a core that reports primarily this committee and then slowly will step out to get as many people in as possible.
Sure. So I'm working on how to say this without appearing to be confrontational because I don't intend to be. The 3 folks that have been selected, how were they selected?
So I would know, absolutely. I would be happy to.
My thought being that if we're going to have a chair of this committee that is going to make these decisions, I think the committee itself should be selecting that person. And I'd just like to hear how the folks that have already been chosen were selected. And what puts the person who is chair in a position to be the chair of that committee prior to selecting the body of that committee?
So I'll provide the background. So Connor Hodges has been, he's a voting member of this committee. He's been on this committee for 4 years. As chief zoner, no, he tends to be active on campus. I've told this story so often. Yes, I remember President Scorton's bow ties and goodbye, seeing you and Connor having a very heated discussion, pausing a moment to say hello to me and then continuing. But he's been very active in this. He has experience in the committee. He knows he's well connected in the undergraduate community. He is also attuned to how the code can be used, in essence, both by the administration and against the administration, and how the balance is played there. He's a senior. He's been on this committee for the past four consecutive years. Actually, he joined when I did. So that's just in terms of looking at someone who has credibility. And I mean, I don't want to put this delicately. He's African American as well, so he's explained he has experience in handling some of the racial issues that are unfortunately are overtones in this matter. So in terms of that area, it looked as if someone who's on the committee, who's been around for a while, who understands the nuance, he seemed to be a logical choice. That being said, if we have someone else who's interested, it's certainly something we can consider. Mr. Stetson asked to be involved. He had experience with statutory construction. He's now a member of the committee. He's a law student I've worked with in the past, and just that experience in terms of drafting language is valuable. And Professor Leibowitz has been on this committee on and off for a number of years, served on the hearing boards, and at our last meeting, she raised a concern about faculty and offered her services. So that's how we have the 3 people we have so far.
Yeah, no disrespect intended.
No, of course. Don't take it.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that it's really important to keep in mind that, like, a couple weeks ago, the UA, like, asked this, like, charged the CJC with moving very quickly on this. And so, like, in my opinion, probably a little too quickly, but that's, you know, not like the UA charged the committee with this. And so I think Matt was like just trying to take the initiative and like follow what the UA said. But I do think it's really important that we clarify, like that it be clarified that right now there are 0 members of the committee, and it's ultimately the prerogative of the CJC consulting with the UA and the executive committee of the UA, and specifically the vice chair for operations of the UA, to figure out the best way to do an ad hoc subcommittee structure. So there might be some people whose names have been floated around. I like Connor. I think he'd like, probably do a good job. I think I would trust him. There are other people that I would probably also trust to do this. And you know, I think it's important that whatever the process be, that it be open, that it be fair. I think like my opinion is it should be a member of this committee. I think that if like it's going to be a subcommittee of the CJC, it like should be a CJC member. I think that's like, I mean, that's my opinion. It seems pretty like obvious to me that would make sense. But I think that like if other people want to do it, I don't think anyone should feel like they should be, you know, that they're excluded. So I just want to lay all that out there so that everyone's on the same page, because I applaud Matt very much for like trying to move as quickly as possible on this. So those were just some of the thoughts that I wanted to throw out there.
Thank you. Excellent experience. It's Michelle.
I'm just looking through UA bylaws, and it seems like there is a subsection that talks about it. Where it says, except otherwise provided, vice chair for operations in consultation with the executive board may appoint members of ad hoc committees. The executive board may remove members. The standing committee may appoint members to or remove members from the subcommittee as it establishes its own direction. So I almost don't think that this is a prerogative for us to decide. It sounds like it's very.
So this is the standing committee.
But this has this, the ad hoc committee would be, is it the ad hoc committee of the UA or is it the ad hoc committee of?
It's an ad hoc committee of this committee. So our documents allow for, and actually we did this 2 years ago at textbook prices, the UA on its own initiative can create ad hoc committees, can also create more standing committees if it's so desired. The standing committees are empowered, A, through our documents to create standing rules, or standing, pardon me, subcommittees, and also through Robert's rules, because our documents are sound. Robert's rules allows any organization to create subcommittees and ad hoc committees as necessary.
The way I read it is that I think only the UA can create an ad hoc committee. I don't see that the CJC can create that.
But I will verify the documents, but having referred, I'm confident there's something in there, and B, I don't believe it. If also in the absence of a restriction, Robert's rules would provide us to, would allow us. Mr. Stetson.
Just in response to that, I think specifically what's going on there is that the UA charter and bylaws don't read it very well. They mention ad hoc committees, and then they mention subcommittees, and this would be an ad hoc subcommittee,
yeah,
which isn't explicitly detailed in the term of bylaws because it's not drafted by somebody who thinks in terms of every contingency. But so I would assume that an ad hoc subcommittee would be able to be created at the sufferance of whatever committee it is a subcommittee of.
Yeah.
I think I can solve this fast. I declare very fast executive committee meeting. We have quorum. We have three of us. Are we okay delegating this to the CJC?
Yes.
Jeremy?
Sure.
Yes.
Well, that...
I am reporting from the executive committee. We are delegating to you forming this now whatever section it's under. We've covered it.
Absolutely fine. And as I said, I believe Robert's rules give us the cover we need anyways, but again, for the formality, I believe that is fortunately one of the least of our concerns on that level.
Yeah.
if only this whole issue was so easy.
Michelle,
you said I'm going to
reply. Richard, thank you. Yeah, sorry.
So I'm having a fun Jeremy on this spot. The structure of the committee. And it sounds like you would like a process that's co option bench representative, and we end up with the right numbers the right way. I'm a little bit concerned that in this process of co-option and appointment, we may end up with more candidates, say two competing candidates representing a particular committee. So that we're aware of this, so that when it comes to us, if we have too many prospective members, this committee decides which one serves. Is that right?
The intent is to allow it. In my experience, in my somewhat non-trivial but also not extensive experience with shared government in the last few years, what our intent with this is to avoid having assigned specific seats. That's why I was even looking at the core coming from this assembly, from this committee, making it 3-4 members, and then in essence, all who choose to attend are free to do so. In my past experience, the first couple of meetings of a working group like this are going to be packed, and then either fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, over the coming weeks, people will self-select in and out. This is also a relatively dry topic once you start getting into the actual language of where should a comma go, which is this committee knows is something we is important because it does affect how the cause reads. So generally, our hope with this is anyone's interested to serve, and it is I would imagine and I expect that over time we will self-select down to an appropriate size. If we don't, we can then move in. That's why the idea of layers is we can start moving further in if necessary.
Okay, should be 3 or 4. It should be 3 or 5. But I'm still a little bit unsure about how this works. Mm-hmm. So we have 3.
Is it, so or 3
we might go to 5. Mm-hmm. And then see who shows up at the first meeting. And we might for a second meeting. I'm a little concerned about how this process.
Absolutely. I was working on in Photoshop to make an almost imagine a bullseye diagram to try and clarify this. Our hope is, if we're going for 5 people, my first blush would be four, one from each constituency and a chair. And my idea is to have those be, in essence, the core. They are the voting membership. And then everyone else gets brought in. Voting is almost a necessary evil. But the idea would be to have those 5 people are the ones who are actually going to the voting. And they are then charged with moving further out as we get out with all comers who are interested. Because my concern is that we have, unless you were the voting aspect is the one where you do have the cabinets. If you don't, you're going to have you could have 20 people show up and all of a sudden swing a vote just because they've shown up.
So an appropriate thing for us to do is to decide the number.
I would posture that. Yeah.
So if I were to move 5, that would be appropriate?
It would be, yes. We do have Mr. Stetson would like to speak, so we could just wait for a motion to let him. If you have something you want to add.
I was just going to say, so like right now there are 0, like there's no one on this. Right. We just charged, like, I mean, we technically didn't even, well, I guess the executive committee just charged it technically. But like there is no standing, like there's no committee, there's no ad hoc committee yet. There's no chair. It's really up to the CJC to decide like what it thinks is the best way to delegate this. That's how I see it. You guys get the ability to do that. I mean, that's how this works. You can make a motion to say, well, it should have 5 people. You know, someone else could say it should have 50 people. Someone could say it should have 500 people. You know, I think that, you know, like it's kind of free form, but like that's the way I see it is, you know, you're pretty unencumbered.
Thank you. Next on speaker is Mr. Stetson, Mr. Cruiser, Professor Bensel, and then Mr. Riveria.
So speaking as one of the 2 most junior members, I'm not going to make the motion, but I think another way to imagine this subcommittee structure is, you know, 1 core member from each assembly, preferably from the CJC. I think actually having 4 core members is okay because we can assume the chair will abstain, and that's pretty common practice. Chair doesn't abstain, it's usually to break a tie, which means that somebody else is abstaining somewhere anyway. I would be inclined to leave the size of the voting membership of the subcommittee up to the chair in consultation with the other 3 core members, because I think there are good arguments to be made for keeping the voting membership very small, which I think you've elaborated on pretty well. I think there are also good arguments to be made for extending the franchise, as it were, a little bit, and making sure that there is a meaningful representative swath of the affected communities and stakeholders who have actual votes. That's not just a symbolic measure. Having an actual vote as well as a seat at the table is pretty meaningful. And that might be something to leave up to the core group of CJC members who are subcommittee members to decide after they have
Thank you. And actually, on that, 2 points. 1, it is our intent to have all members of this committee be ex officio members of this working group, just so that if you will have standing to be at the meeting, speak, and do everything you need to do, because the intent is this is world war to us. Also, I guess a concern that I have heard raised about, in essence, giving out votes to everyone and spreading the franchise liberally, is a concern that if you have a large contingent of undergrads arriving, in essence, you come down to the same idea that you have 10 undergraduates who vote unanimously, and then all the other constituents could vote no if they outnumber them. So that's why the concern, an idea that had been floated was a core group of equal from each, and everyone can discuss, everyone can be a member, but the thing is the actual voting comes down to people who are from this committee, and then in consultation with that is obviously to be decided. Next in speaker is Jeremy.
So, yeah, I think the point I wanted to make was made there as well, which is I don't think we want to artificially limit the members of this subcommittee. That should be left up to the committee as they develop their plan. I also think that the chair of that committee should be selected by the committee. So I understand the need for this to be a subcommittee of the CJC, and since it's changing code or proposing changes to code that we will propose up, because again, we're not
to propose.
Yeah, propose to propose. I think that we should give more autonomy to this subcommittee to do what it needs to do to get the job done and not place artificial limitations upon it. So having said that, we do need representation from the CJC on it. I don't necessarily think they have to be the chair as long as somebody who's selected is going to do the job.
Just in terms of practical experience, we actually tried something, a similar idea that a working group that is charged and sent off to have autonomy in the past, and the working group faltered because they spent three or four meetings simply trying to pick a chair because people wanted to be involved. And that's why the concern was finding someone who on paper has credentials or which are seem to check a number of the boxes, has experience, would appear just to be at the very least on paper chair until the committee decides otherwise, was something that had come forward, because our goal also is to, with the timeline brought forward by the UA, to try and ensure that some of these smaller nitty-gritty things that a committee can get bogged down on, especially if there's no hierarchy. For instance, I could be in the first working group session, but then you start having a competing of, oh, people start looking to be for the authority instead of whoever's chairing it. So you just
need to be considered. And in addition to that, I do agree with the idea of balancing constituencies, students, faculty, staff. But at the same time, we need to look at what other constituent groups these folks represent and make sure that we have good representation there as well.
Thank you. Next is Richard.
So here are the concerns. If you have an indeterminate membership, how do you select the committee chair if the committee membership is being?
I'm sorry. It's just, I was thinking about how, yeah.
So, along with that, I have a concern that, I like the formulation of ad hoc subcommittee. The ad hoc subcommittee is the agent of this committee, not an autonomous body. And I worry that my concern is that committee, when it meets, open forum, gets packed with a lot of people, has no instructions from us, and all these people show up, and you feel they have to include them. I think a little more structure is a good idea than what I hear so far.
Next speaker is Dale, then Anna, then Gabe, then Michelle, and Jeremy.
So I'm obviously not a voting member of this committee, but I did want to propose that you might want to consider really mirroring Professor Van Loan's calendar committee, where he asked each assembly to send two people, and then the assemblies were able to choose who they were to send. So for the calendar committee, we sent one student assembly representative, and then we sent one member of the community whose main goal was to work on a specific goal, which was changing Indigenous Peoples Day, which was successful. And so I think if you ask the assemblies to figure out who they need to send, maybe after the forum, maybe go to the forum and then say, oh, message your assembly's internal operations person to consider, or your operations person to consider your name for being sent. And I know it would be larger, but I think you should consider maybe making an 11-person committee taking the three CJC members and then two members from each body, or maybe even cut out, two members from each body, have the SA, the Faculty Senate, the EA, and the GPSA send two names, whether or not those are members of those bodies or those are community members. And then those don't have to be the individuals you have at every meeting of the subcommittee. So you can tell them that you don't have to send these two people, but just send two people to be part of the discussion. And they're only going to be voting when they're proposing the actual code changes. So you don't need voting members to make the working group functional every week, but you do need some type of consistency and structure.
If actually, on that, thank you. Something also that in terms of voting membership, and this is, I was taking it for granted. We don't, the working group, because it work, or the ad hoc committee working group, the sub body that would be working for this, they serve at our pleasure. So if it comes down to it, at the end, they have two options. We can simply take from the committee and then consider it ourselves. So if they come down to a deadlock and it's a 2-2 split, we more or less, we invite them and say, okay, speak on why two of you are this way, two are this way. In this committee, which is 11 people, and is the committee that is charged with handling the code measures on behalf of the UA, we can do that. In terms of managing voting membership, to the idea of having two seats, the question of, the concern is when we start, in my mind, when we start limiting, there's always someone who's willing to feel like they're on the outside looking in. And in serving in shared governance, there are always people who want to be appointed, especially if it's actually an appointment, they'll seek it. They will not be able to attend, or they sought it because they wanted it on a resume, or some other self-aggrandizement. So that concern is that if we start, for essence, too limiting in terms of, oh, there are X seats, then it becomes that there's a prestige component. We start involving a political component. Our goal is to have a community involved. So if someone wants to show up to every single meeting but has never been to an assembly meeting in their life before, that's actually exactly who I think we should want, because they're the ones who are going to be coming in with a fresh point of view. So just something to be aware of. Next on the speaker list is Anna, and then Gabe.
Okay. We have a lot of good ideas here. We also do have a constrained timeline. I like the idea of a core group from this committee, because this is an ad hoc committee of this committee. And that seems like something that is within our power to move forward on now and to delegate to them. And I honestly, it sounds like Connor is extremely qualified, and if he's interested,
yes,
then I'm not seeing, unless other people from this committee wish to run the subcommittee, I'm not seeing why we shouldn't go ahead, vote on this, give it to him, and ask him to come back next week.
Thank you. Next on the speaker list is Gabe, then Michelle, and then Jeremy.
So this is like someone who's like worked with Connor a lot. I really like Connor, and I think he would do a really good job. And if I could pick someone, I'd probably pick Connor. I still think that he ultimately should get like a formal confirm. Like it should be a process. Like, I think that someone from the CJC, like if you are interested, you should be eligible to run. You shouldn't just kind of tap Connor right now. That's my opinion. I mean, if everyone's already on board, then I guess like you guys can go for it. But I would recommend waiting so that people can think about it. So then on the topic of like, should the committee have structure? So like, I think that essentially the way to maybe think about it is there should be like, you should be able to essentially be as involved as you want to be, but there needs to be a couple people who are the working group. Like there have to be some people who like are actually charged when like to make the rubber hit the road. You can't just have a committee that chooses the rest of the committee and chooses its own chair and chooses its own charge. Like you can't, like that's not a working group. That's just like a random group of people that's doing whatever they want. And
nothing will get done.
And nothing will get done. And like, I want something to get done because that's the point of charging a working group. And so like, I don't know, maybe 5 to 7 is the right number. Maybe 11 is the right number. I guess like maybe somewhere in between. I mean, I don't really know the exact numbers, but I think that there should be a group of people. You're right, there might be a political component. That's, I guess, regrettable. But I think that there should be a standing group of people that is charged with making the rubber hit the road. And they should have a very specific task, which is like get us language by a certain date. And I think that's the most efficient way to handle this.
Thank you. And actually, on the point of Mr. Hodges, I, again, noting the timeline, I took the initiative and I have spoken to him about in terms of I said, would he be interested in serving as chair? He was unequivocally yes. I had also begun the process of speaking in terms of just trying to figure out the nitty gritty, and noting that Mr. Stetson and Mr. Leibowitz had also asked to be involved, noting that, to Mr. Coffin's point, being members of this committee, they are people who, A, are at our meetings weekly, conceivably gone actually the conflict of the semester, unfortunately. But in terms of they're here, they are interested, they have expertise, and to make them the core, I personally would like to find a staff member to have a four-person core, just because it works in terms of you have all four constituencies. And then after that, they are the core, they are the ones that report to us. And then after that, really, to throw the doors as wide open as possible. Because from my speaking with people, seeing we have four people, one from each constituency from this committee, or if we can't find a staff member, perhaps just because of the uniqueness of that. But having that is easily defensible as, oh, it's a CDC's committee, the CDC needs to have representation. After that, trying to figure out who gets seats and how many seats becomes very political very quickly. And if we're looking to get to be productive and try and sidestep politics and come up with a product, something the committee members should consider. Next is Michelle and Jeremy, then President Bensel.
I move that Risa and Nate meet between our next CJC meeting and come up with a tentative outline of what this looks like so that this committee can have a structured discussion. I think there's been enough debate as to ideas, but I think we need to move on and let the members who might be presumptively on this committee come to us with an example of maybe having a four-chair structure, having the calendar committee work, kind of, I think that's retrograde, and then talk about what do you have as open forums for feedback and let them kind of come up with those.
Thank you. So I just, before we did Jeremy or Professor Bensel have anything just quick to add before we hop into the actual making emotions?
I'll be really quick. One is, thank you, everybody. You've convinced me. I agree that the idea I initially had was too unstructured. I really like what was said about the structure of the calendar committee. I think that can work, and I agree that we need to formally vote in a few core members from this committee to represent this subcommittee. So I'm on board.
Thank you.
So I like Michelle's proposal. I do think the calendar committee, as it was described, I think that would end up having too many people who are participating too seldom. So that at the end, you will get, out of these 11, 4 or 5 of them won't show up. And until you get voting on the code, and then you're throwing the whole process open because those people don't know what's going on. I think it's too many, but I will defer. I mean, this is something we should have another discussion about.
Absolutely.
Next week. But I do think 11 is too big, and I think the process of that kind of two from every place. We've got to fill this. And you're going to get people that are marginal. That bothers me a lot.
From, not by, not from. So the idea is, that, at least that I'm understanding here, is that these would not necessarily need to be seated voting members of the assembly, but just a couple of folks chosen by each assembly to represent.
It still is, you're filling slots that way.
I can tell you that would not be the case from the employee assembly.
I think you can leave this to Risa and Nate.
Hey, what, and how, what, like, just why Risa and Nate? Seems like just like a random.
Well, if I may, Ms. Horvath, in motion to add her. Absolutely.
Well, my only concern is I don't want to delay things because there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I agree, we need to have somebody kind of starting to make decisions, starting to to get things moving. So I understand what Gabe is saying. I'm just hesitant to, with the time constraints that we have on us, delaying too long to do structural kinds of things. I almost feel like we should be right now voting on who's going to be at least B core person to start this so they can get started on doing some work.
Absolutely, I think that was Michelle's motion. And just to restate and add a teeny bit of commentary, this is my prerogative. I think in terms of there was a motion to add Mr. Stetson and Ms. Leibowitz, Professor Leibowitz, pardon me, to the to working group. We also was talking about Connor. Was that included in your motion or excluded from your motion? Or
It's excluded from this time, and I would defer to this because I think there is a benefit, as Gabe has talked about, of having some formalized process if we're saying that, you know, he is a member of the CJC, maybe that's a distinction, but I think trusting these two individuals who've heard all these conversations to determine what the structure of the committee and, you know, who they would select as chairs or co-chairs, but at least giving them sort of the first stab at what this is like. I think we're going round and round. We have nothing tangible from the conversation yet.
Thank you. You remember my name. That's why we closed out. Mr. Coffin, briefly, just me to add.
So yeah, like, but Michelle, that's completely arbitrary. Like, I like Nate and I like Risa, but like, Nate just joined the committee like 20 minutes ago. And like, as much as I appreciate them and like the work that they're doing and think they would be like great members of the committee, like there's, I mean, they're just like, it's, I mean, it, I don't know. It just seems like kind of like arbitrary at this point. I don't think we should vote on who to put on a committee until there is like an actual piece of paper that shows like what the committee will look like. If you guys are like ready to have people exist on a working group that like doesn't like formally exist yet, then like I guess that's okay. But like I think it would make a lot more sense to have like the to come back next week with a piece of paper that has what a structure looks like, consulting with, you know, the executive committee and Matt, so that we can actually like have something that's somewhat structured, and then we can start staffing it. I mean,
thank you.
Yeah.
So in terms of, we're getting back up to speakers list, there was a motion made. In terms of, this has been an informal discussion. We've allowed this to continue to see it to be handled. As seen from where I am, I see there are three paths forward based off of what has been discussed. There is one, the path as described by Mr. Coffman. As I mentioned at the beginning, I am working on some infographics to describe my idea of how this might work. My intent is to have this committee next week. We could postpone this until next week, continue to work with that, and then at that time have an infographic and have more time to come up with some names. There is the path advocated by Michelle, which is to add Nate Stetson and Risa Lieberwitz to, in essence, just the shell of a working group to work on this. And there's also the, I guess what I have been operating under, working with Connor Hodges as well, and obviously with the intent of bringing Nate and Professor Lieberts in as well as volunteers to start working on that. But it seems like we've come to a loggerhead, and as Michelle said, we are going round and round. So there are three options. For the first one, is there a sense of the committee, a distinction between whether Connor should at the very least be included in this group or not, so that we can get down to two?
So somebody's got to draw up this plan. Gabe is talking about. We could have a working group to do that. That could be Mr. Stetson. That could be Risa.
This is insane.
They're
okay,
not
okay.
On the committee yet. They are a working group to propose the structure.
It's a working group to create a working group that's a sub ad hoc committee of a standing committee of the assembly. This is like if actually this is laughable.
This is insane. If I may,
you,
in terms of
can you do it?
How is this real? I couldn't make this up.
Ladies and gentlemen, if again noting that we are over on time of this, which I have indulged because we are had a fruit discussion, considering there are a number of points of disagreement. To avoid continuing to go around this merry-go-round, is there an objection from the committee for myself to continue? I was making some infographics about a general structure to generate a document, which this committee will then discuss at its next meeting. So at the very least, we're discussing an actual proposal instead of ethereal ones. I will include Connor Hodges, Nate Stetson, and Risa Lieberwitz because they are ones who have shown interest and asked to be involved. And if anyone else would like to be involved, please contact me. I will bring you into the circle. But in this case, and the going around until we have a concrete document, which we will have at our next meeting.
I move that.
The only other thing I would add is if you could get it out to us in electronic form as early as possible.
Absolutely.
So we can have a little discussion around it.
I hope we'll have it to you by the week, sometime in the weekend.
Okay, great. Perfect.
So is it a motion? A second?
Michelle's motion.
This was gone. Thank you, Michelle. So there's a motion to do that. I will, this is in essence to restate. Should we say the motion? Is there a second first? So there's a second. The motion would be for myself to complete or to come up with an infographic slash sketch plan, looping in Connor Hodges, Nate Stetson, and Risa Lieberwitz. As individuals who volunteered, anyone else wants to be involved, please ask. It's plenty of room. And then we will do that and have next meeting, have a discussion. Hopefully, we'll be briefer and we'll be able to handle this adequately. There's a motion, a second. Is there any dissent to voting on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor of that motion, please raise your hand or placard. All who are opposed, all would like to abstain. Chair abstains, I vote 6-0-1. I will have something for this committee at our next meeting, and we will hopefully move forward from that. As I said before, I also, if this committee, assuming there's no objections, I will also be in the process of scheduling an open forum for sometime there next week or beginning of next with the office assemblies. Hearing no objections, moving on to the next topic of our agenda is the beginning of the process of holistic evaluation of the code, which is the other prong of our agenda this semester. It was pushed back slightly because of the hate speech, and as we saw, the considerable discussion about that. However, our goal, based on the request of President Pollack, at the very least, is to consider how to simplify and make the code more readable to laymen. The code, the understanding I've received from a number of individuals as well, is generally, it functions well. The structure, the bones are good, but it's a product of changes over time and a product of a law professor's writing it, and therefore it's legalese. So, and because of that, the idea was, at the very least, to go through and clean up the language so it's more understandable, and then as we're going through that to discuss if there are changes to be made. But my understanding from speaking with members of the community is there are two concerns. One, that clarifying language is good. Some changes can engender fear. That being said, there are also concerns that there are provisions that are out of date. And the concern also was trying to lump them together. So something that I had gathered from members of the community and committee was to at first run through and attempt to clean it up. And in the process of cleaning it up, hopefully identify areas that we personally think are confusing, convoluted, or otherwise need to be tweaked. There are some offenses that appear in triplicate or are hyper-specific, like in response to a specific event. In the process of cleaning it up, identifying a laundry list of areas that we think could do some more work, and then after that, shopping them around, but at the very least having some form of cleaned up document. So if nothing else is accomplished, we have cleaned up the code and made it more understandable, and then moving on to an evaluation in terms of what the actual procedures are. But that being said, that is simply what I have gathered. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns regarding that? This is a large undertaking, but I wanted to bring it to the committee as soon as possible. Michelle.
I've had some conversations with Matt and Gabe about this, anecdotally, and I think looking at kind of campuses who've done a complete code overall, the University of Kansas, Kansas State, I forget which one, but they have a system that's very similar to ours in the decentralization, the multi-colleges, University of Michigan, other state schools have very similar ones. And so I've reached out to some of my colleagues at those schools to look at kind of the structure that they do. I've asked Matthew and Gabe to kind of sit down, but we've kind of, with all the stuff going on, we haven't had time to kind of schedule that meeting. What I would like to kind of provide from the kind of research that I've done and done with other code revisions is that usually there's about 7 working committees, one that looks at, for example, the pedagogy, you know, what educational interventions are we doing in a successful way, one that looks at the rewriting, one looks at, you know, the laws that we have to follow by the state and federal regulations. And so basically kind of a proposal that might be submitted to this committee is having 7 working groups, looking at timelines and things of that nature. But I think one of the things that is really important, if we look at, on one hand, only doing a plain English rewrite, I think that's going to be as much work as a complete code overhaul. So I would be leaning towards the idea of a complete code overhaul. One of the things that might be kind of beneficial for us to kind of start to look at is the model code of conduct. There's sort of a model student code of conduct in the same ways as sort of like a model federal rules and things of that nature. But one of the things I think we need to kind of think about our willingness to address is 2 things. One, should we have a campus code of conduct or should we have a student code of conduct and then a faculty and staff set of guidelines? The reason that I say that is because one, we had 3 staff and faculty cases last year. That's it. And so I think that can demonstrate a couple different things. But we also have to remember that a university's relationship to a faculty and staff member is very different than that of a student. So I think we need to kind of be willing to have that conversation. And the idea if we have a common code of practice but different procedures, do we even need to have a common code of conduct? I think the other thing that we really need to look at, and I'm gonna say it and I know I'm gonna be yelled at and stuff thrown at me, but I think we really need to look at our standard of proof. I know that would have clear and convincing, but I think that when we look at sports and we look at when is that clear and convincing level used, this is when we take kids away from their parents. We use the preponderance of evidence and every other standard, and that's a standard that we as a university have to go to when we go to court. So I think we really need to have the conversation again of, do we have such a high standard because we have faculty and staff in our code and that property interest is different? That's my guess as to why we have such a high standard. Because I think we're really doing a disservice to our university because we're holding people to a low standard of responsibility, which means that I have a lot of victims that I have to say, sorry, we can't move forward with this. So those are the two questions I think we also have to really include as we're starting this. And I bring it up just so people can start to ruminate and do their own research as we start to do that. But my hope is to work with, at least to kind of throw up some things with Matt and Gabe and the JCCs to at least give us a starting point to have a conversation about.
Thank you. And we have Nate and Jeremy, just to comment on the issues we brought up. They have spoken to me and they have stated unequivocally, and they have said it in quote unquote in the strongest possible terms, in most respectful terms, they are vehemently against modifying the quantum of proof in any way, shape, or form. Ms. Carr was unable to be here this evening, but she has always asked that if that comes brought up, to bring that up. I have a comment I will reserve until then, the speakers list. So next, our first is Nate. Pardon me.
Yeah, so this response may surprise you in that I actually have. So the yelling is yes, 100% agree. I would like to yell from the rooftops that the adherence to the clear and convincing standard is bizarre and nonsensical, and I think is largely an artifact of non-lawyers running universities, which is as it should be. We want lawyers running universities, but yeah, it's nuts that we use this super high standard of proof, which really is a lowered burden on the other party, when in fact when as you say, the majority of non-criminal lawsuits use the preponderance of evidence standard, and when the ability of the university to punish its members is so much less than that of the state, the university doesn't actually have the ability to exact with judicial force any amount of money from anybody, and it doesn't have the ability to put anybody in jail. So I think preponderance of evidence standard is 100% the appropriate quantum of proof. It surprises me not in the slightest that that Kendall Carr would argue against that. I think she is sort of obligated by her role, and I think it's the responsible thing of her to do. But I think that she's essentially sort of working in a defense context, and obviously somebody in a defense-oriented person is going to be obligated on behalf of their clients to oppose that. But I think it's weird. My comment on the severing the conduct expectations for faculty and employees would be only that I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. I think it would have to be done very carefully in order to convey the right message about why those, how those standards and expectations are different. I think the lesson of those of us who have been working recently on reforming or creating an actual policy governing relationships between faculty members and students is that frequently it's much harder to hold faculty members and staff accountable for their actions. And I think a lot of the time the academy, sort of the social structure of the academy, it likes to divide the difference between grad students in particular and professors, and actually there is pretty big power in that. So I'm curious as to how that would look. I think it could be done. I think it could be done.
Next speaker, this is Jeremy.
So first is the idea of separating out faculty and staff. I agree that it would have to be done carefully, but I think it actually could serve to better hold accountable employees and faculty if there was equivalent documents for specifically staff and faculty. And in fact, I think the reason it would be more effective is because it could be more targeted and specific, and then the student code of conduct could be more targeted and more specific, and we would have to be forced into less generalizations across the different constituencies because they are very different in the way we interact. So I think that could be done. I think that's a huge amount of work. And it would have to be done very carefully, but I think it could be effective. The other part on quantum proof, and I'm sure this is what Matt's going to talk about because we had a very lengthy conversation over this because of one of my resolutions to the EAA, which talked about changing quantum proof. I understand the difference in perspective between the two quantums of proof, and I think in part, though, you talked about us not being able to punish folks, which always gives me the heebie-jeebies anyway, because I like to think about not being a punishing organization, but a learning organization. I think that we can have very serious, very long-term negative effects on a person, particularly with transcript mutations, as we discussed. So the perspective that was brought for that higher burden of proof is, if we're going to have a very negative impact on someone for a long period of time, we want to be very certain that they did it. Whereas my perspective from the lower burden of proof was, if we're pretty sure somebody did something, we want to help them not make that same mistake again. And we want to be very clear that what we're pretty sure they did was wrong. So it's two very different perspectives that approach that proof. And I get it. I'm not sure what the right answer is. Because I do, if we're going to actually negatively impact somebody's life, I want to be pretty damn sure that they did it. If we actually had the code move to a more positive framework of education and improvement of folks, I think we wouldn't be nearly so worried about having a very high burden of proof, because even if we're just pretty sure you did it, okay, there's no harm done sending you through some training and sending you through some education, helping you improve yourself. I think that's, for me, the dichotomy is the, how sure are we that they did it? And we want to be very clear that you're wrong. So, like I said, I don't have any answer there. I'm going to pass it on to Matt to give his side of that conversation.
I actually placed myself in the speaker's list because I have a very strong opinion on this. But next is Professor Leibowitz, then myself, and then Richard. And we're coming up at the end of our meeting, so if I have a motion to extend by 5 minutes to allow that to continue.
Second.
Any dissent? Hearing none, the meeting is extended until 5:50. Professor Leibowitz, you have the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think this issue of the code and how to structure it, whether to change it, how to change it, this is one where process matters. And, you know, Michelle, you started out, I think, very correctly by saying we should think about how to structure working groups, what the questions are that will go to each of them, looking at different models. That's what I think we should be talking about now. I think jumping to the substantive question of the quantum of proof, you know, I mean, I have my view on it, too. And I'm a lawyer, and I believe clear and convincing evidence is the right approach. So I think that there are rational lawyers who believe that this would be an appropriate approach, counting myself in there. So at least most of the time. But at any rate, so I don't know why we're talking about all these substantive issues, other than the fact they're really very interesting, and we know we will have that on the table. And I think the question of should there be a separate student code as opposed to a faculty incentive, I think it's a very worthy questions. I just don't know why we're talking about the merits of those questions right now, when what really matters for something that's this colossal, you know, of a project, you know, it could be narrow, but it sounds like it's going to be broader. This is where process matters. And so I would just propose that we really not get into all these substance of people's particular issues yet.
Thank you. On the quantum of proof, I have a very strong and a very long and eloquent discussion about why I believe it would be very dangerous to lower it. Some of you who are longer may remember the Krauss report. I am not a supporter of a lot of the recommendations in that report. I don't personally believe splitting faculty and staff out serves the best interests of a one Cornell. I think a lower standard of proof is would also be a backward slide. But that being said, I press really the point. This is also why I had, in my discussions, had heard that there is an idea to move to plain language, and there's an idea to do a complete front-to-back overhaul. And even though, as Michelle said, that it would be, in essence, the amount of work to do plain language as it would to actually start tinkering with the structure, the idea that had been floated in terms of to avoid some of these type of discussions would consume this committee for months, years, etc. I mean, this committee would never be done. So the idea that had been proposed, or I started speaking with Gabe and his thinking had come up with, was to move to a plain language structure. And in doing so, we will identify some non-controversial, oh gosh, this is in the code three times, this is silly, or this is a hyper-specific provision that can be better absorbed. There will be non-controversial changes. And then there will be, right now, the standard of proof that is in plain. We put a graphic to describe what the different standards of proof are and how clear and convincing or preponderance is. But there are two areas. One is we've been asked by the president to clarify, and the other is going in and starting to tinker with a lot of the bones. Tinkering with the bones, I think, actually, and I know, will engender strong emotions. It will engender an incredible amount of discussion and dissent, whereas trying to simplify language is less likely to do so, but we'll also identify areas that we could possibly improve, which is something that I would like the committee to consider in terms of just logistically, maybe, even though it's a similar amount of work, it may be a more achievable goal because we can take out a lot of the politics of it and a lot of the, okay, who's even thinking, if you're thinking about changing the bones, all of a sudden then who is simplifying it becomes a lot more of an issue because, if you have an opinion, it's going to creep itself into your writing style. And that would, of course, require double or triple. I mean, that just thinking about where it goes, it starts to break down trust and starts to break down things. But that is something for this committee to consider. Next is Professor Bensel, then Mr. Cruiser, and I suspect that will exhaust our time.
So I agree with the clear and convincing group, but I think the discussion is premature. I do think the question of a single or separate codes is not premature because it goes straight to the organization. And I like Michelle's point about delegating to committees. I don't know how to do that, but I like it. But you can't delegate to the committees if you don't know whether you have one code. So you're going to have to decide that first. And I'll just state a preference for one code. I mean, this could be another discussion, but the preference is on two prongs. One is, I think we're one community, and I think standards of integrity, of relations, and so forth should apply throughout the university. I understand there's some situations that be staff to staff, and so forth and so on, but there is one ethic. The second is that it's very difficult to even get three codes. Two, it's very difficult to deal with relations between the codes. So university administrators and students, and you know which one applies. I mean, there are contradictions. There have been contradictions in the last year between university officials holding themselves to different standards than they hold students. And it makes no sense to me. There's an ethical question. And it's also a question of jurisdictions. So that, I understand we're going to, but that discussion really is prior to the rest of it.
Thank you, Professor Bensel. And it's on that, there's a, and I'm going to go to Jeremy, because we're at time, if we'll have a quick comment, but in terms of, Nate, but in terms of just, there was a concern also raised that by splitting the code out into three codes, it is less likely a committee such as this would be able to adequately handle it. And the concern is, would it become simply a policy, in which case it could be after prior, the last couple of times things have been pulled out of the assembly's jurisdiction or split out, it is a variable historical trend, not that it guarantees a future result, has been that they fall, the community loses a lot of its sway and it moves into more of an administrative area. And that is the reality with 6.4, it is the reality with a lot of areas. And even looking at the discussion with non-matriculated minors, there was an awareness on the committee of that we are in essence signing that off. And there was a discussion about, is that appropriate? Something to be considered. Now, Jeremy and then Nathan, we're going to
end the meeting. That makes a lot of sense. Sorry, thank you for making good points. What I'm thinking about now is probably most of this should be pushed back, even if we were to consider a different approach to these codes. I don't think now is the time. I think now we should focus on the single code that we have currently. And my question is, do they then do we break out into these separate subgroups? And if so, how are we going to construct those? I almost think we should probably just go through, take section 1A and address that one. And once we've gotten through that 1B and just go through, I know that doesn't address some of the interplay between things, but some of that will, I think, will become clear as we go through it. I think we just need a structured pattern to move forward to at least get a good first pass through things and get our feet underneath us. I think if we kind of decentralize the work on this too much, we're not going to get as much work done.
Thank you. In just in my discussions previously, an idea was, essence, have the code, a new code, and going through. I mean, honestly, this committee, the code is about 40 pages, but there's enough in there that's either philosophical, which doesn't need to be, or it's duplicative, which can be consolidated. But in essence, the old code on one side, a new draft code that's simplified on the other. In essence, just moving, copying it through, and moving through as a committee, looking at logistically that maybe, maybe that's what this committee is capable of doing, so we're going through chronologically. It might take, I've told the administration, I've told them it might take a year, or possibly up until, I mean, this time next year, or this next, not this coming spring, but next spring. But in terms of looking at what this committee is capable of doing, I think that is well within our wheelhouse, especially if we're just at the moment attempting to clarify and simplify language, and then afterwards having discussions about everything else. Noting we are at the end of time, Mr. Stetson, I turn the floor to you.
Yeah, I was going to formally move to postpone items, or sub-items 4 and 5, definitely until our next meeting, and move to adjourn.
The motion time has expired, so there's no dissent. The committee, the meeting is over. And they start our time. Thank you very much. The meeting adjourned. The time is 5:52.
I just want to get it on record that.
Yes, no, we will be. In terms of just, is the private person makes the agenda?
They won't fall off.
Oh, that's right, because there's no executive.
It's just you.
It's me.
which reminds me of my time on the UA, because there were times when even with the UA executive committee was it.
When I find time, which is I don't know when.
Yeah,
that's why I'm here.
Yes, I would like to see
the audio.
And the audio is there because it has to be.
If somebody doesn't like your notes, they can't listen to the audio.
Yeah.
In terms of which is why Victoria and Nate, this is why they were everything from
KCF, the lawsuit was interested.
Yes.
And there was,
well, this
was very new, and they asking for feedback about
this is brand new. They're recording audio recording committee
and trying to sort out.
Well, I mean, they always are there for the CJC.
Actually, Ms. Edwards, you're at a conflict this evening. She's hosting a guest on campus. But something that has been loaded, and it's funny, I was going to ask Nate in office, but because there are